Welcome back to the Legal Digest podcast with your host, Natalie. And today I'm joined by Stephanie Forbes, founder of Forbes Consults, a training and coaching service that she offers to law firms. Prior to this, Stephanie worked as a case manager for a personal injury law firm in the US for 17 years. We're going to be talking about the importance of providing training and coaching services to lawyers to help them develop their skills and their career, and also help keep law firms up to date with the modern way of working. Thanks for joining me today, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Today's way of working has changed drastically. We've had the move of work streams over to almost completely digital. So I think there's a skills gap in the workforce where we have been forced to change almost overnight with the impact of the global pandemic. Coupled with the hybrid and remote workforce, you have a situation where graduates and inexperienced colleagues are entering the workforce without the same learning experience that we all had when we first started. So your company, Forbes Consult, provides training and coaching. How did you identify a need for training in law firms?
Oh, I worked, you know, like you said before, in a firm for over 17 years. And when you're thrown into the fire, you know, you're thrown in there and it's really tough to navigate. And a lot of times I feel firms really experience turnover because employees truly just don't understand fully what their expectations are. And in personal injury, it takes 6 to 8 months to even know that you did something wrong. So I saw in the past with other people that they would get to a point where they had learned so much, you know, they're in the position for 8 months, 9 months, but things are coming back from what they did when they, their first week. And they get discouraged, you know, later on, they're like, oh man, I made all these mistakes but now I've learned and, you know, they're still learning. And I just find that if you're able to help people from the starting point, in addition to helping tenured employees understand strategy tips, that it truly does make a difference in someone staying with your company.
And does your passion, your work come from your own personal experiences growing up?
So yeah, like when I was young, I definitely felt defenseless. You know, I felt like there wasn't a person or people there for me. You know, when I was like 16, I was in a homeless shelter and have my parents there. My mother couldn't afford, you know, she was at a shelter herself. And my dad, I couldn't reach him. And I just felt so just on my own. And I had ran into some issues, legal, where I should have had a contract in place for doing business with someone and I didn't. And I felt the ramifications of that. And I said to myself, man, I don't want anyone to feel the way I feel. I felt so just used. And then I felt as if there was something I could do to help myself. And I always wanted to just equip myself with the knowledge that I could never feel that feeling ever again. So that's the reason why I got in learning so much from the ground up, because I knew that as an adult after college, if I couldn't succeed, there was no one that was gonna be there for me. And that fear led me to be in an office at 4 a.m. to midnight every day. So, you know, spending holidays, I didn't have family, learning and working cases to the point that I dared someone to be better than me. So I truly feel like that is what really shaped me as an adult, because when I see someone not putting their all, I'm like, why not? Why would you not want to be the best?
Yeah,
so I agree. I bring that out of people.
So your company trains law firms more specifically in personal injury and case management work, but do you think there are other areas that law firms need to have regular training or coaching on?
100%. So I am, I truly believe that like every genre, so I mainly, like you said, do personal injury, but I am, before the end of the year, I'll have together real estate, estate planning, criminal, family, and immigration. And so I've been consulting with industries of the, you know, their top people within those industries and getting together a training material for them. And in return, you know, I get to use the material all, you know, so I check it with several different, you know, attorneys in different states so that we can have the different variations of what we need. But essentially, before the end of the year, I will have all of the trainings for all those different areas. But for myself, I offer auditing, which the other services won't have an auditing component because I don't know those areas extensively enough to do an audit on them. But with personal injury, I do go through the cases and create an audit and provide you with like a graph of like standard of like deviations that's causing, you know, your firm to not maximize their value. So I'll show a picture graph of like, this is the data that I collected from all of your cases. These are the things that are hurting each case. And here's the, you know, and here's the case value that was diminished per case. And then I provide them with a full like dissertation of if you do this, 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 and this, and implement these things, then your in your new cases, you'll see your values go up.
And can you see like your services potentially going a bit more international, because in the UK we don't necessarily have that kind of service yet? It's not really embedded within the culture, but there's definitely, you know, a need, I think, for training in law firms and other companies where lawyers are working.
So I'm happy you asked that, because I have, so right now the US is broken up into 50 different states, and every state has a different law. So every state is almost like a different country, and we do have our like the same currency, but I mean, at one point we didn't, but we do have our own currency, but every state is 100% different. The strategy is what I teach is, I think it works all over. I was talking to some girls in South Africa, some lawyers out there. There are places, we even have people working with us that are in like Egypt or the Philippines, even though they're like 12 hours ahead, but we teach them basically how to do what we do. And then we help them with, you know, helping other law firms here. So we do that currently where we work with other countries, but in training, I think the biggest part is the strategy of it. And then going over what your laws are specifically in the areas that meet the training, and then me putting it together, just like I did with the family law firm, immigration law firm, because they had to come in and say, this is how we do it. And this is how I would like the training to be brought out. And they have that service for year round. It's all over. And then they have me to discuss and talk with them about certain things as well. So a part of what I'm saying is, yes, it is something that can be done. And, you know, just to remind you, you guys are like, we're an extension of you. Like our laws are completely the foundation of them. They all came from you.
yeah, there's a connection there.
that's a major connection there. So
you developed the Forbes method, so can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so the Forbes method, it's really like, honestly, I have so much passion about like what I do that like it becomes so, it's about the details in personal injury. So for instance, I'll go in and I'll teach them customer service is like one of the big things that I go over. That's in my book, it's like at least like a whole chapter. And then I go on to filtering cases. Like what do you need to know early on when looking at a case and determining whether it's feasible for you to accept that case? And then from there, I go into the different injuries and what types of doctors, you know, that you would need, an orthopedic, a chiropractor, a podiatrist, what type of doctor would you need per injury? And really what's really big right now is TBI, traumatic brain injury, and understanding how to identify that and understanding that your case value goes up. It shoots up 20, 40, 60 grand with just pointing that out. So the strategy, then I go into, you know, what to expect within the first 7 days of a case, the first 30 days, 30 to 90. And then I kind of discuss 4 months at 120, and then discussing what needs to be done at those stages. So I'll break down bulletin points. I have modules with quizzes that kind of go over, you know, what needs to be done within this time frame that will maximize the impact. And then from there, I kind of discuss negotiation tactics and settlements and how to, and just the spirit of reductions with doctor's offices and other places so that your client can maximize, you know, what they have in their pocket. And, you know, just talking about certain ways, you know, when you're driving a car, right? And you're, the GPS will tell you, okay, get off on this very first exit. And you're like, okay, all right. But in your mind, you're like, I know this area. If I go two more exits up, I can actually, it'll be closer to my destination and it's a straight shot. So I don't have to worry about accidents or, you know, anything scary. So it's the same way in training. It's like someone in your field or someone can tell you, okay, this is A, B, and C, and this is how you do it. That may work, but then I also provide that part, but then I also provide the strategy, which is the, come here, this is what works. This is what really, when they say this to you, this is what you need to do. And so giving them those tips of like, the biggest thing that law firms like to take out or adjusters are, oh, there's degeneration in your spinal column. And it's like, okay, first of all, everyone has degeneration, okay? That is, if you have an age, you're gonna have degeneration because it's just your body aging. So you cannot put that as you cannot take away value from what I'm demanding for something I'm not even adding to its value. That's not a part of the conversation. And when we go to court, the doctor is going to testify that degeneration is not a permissible argument to not pay me for this herniated disc. So it's like, you know, understanding what to say to these adjusters and being able to combat them in a way that makes them immediately give you more money on a case. I had a case where it was a little baby and the woman gave me $15,000 as an initial offer on the 30K medicals. And I'm like, the baby injured themselves by stabbing themselves with a knife, but there was a caregiver that was there, was supplied by that company. And they just decided that, you know, they weren't going to be at fault because of, you know, whatever. And I said, not only did the young girl cry and she took fault for it, now you guys have accepted responsibility and there's 30K in meds on a six-year-old and you have the nerve. It was a woman on the phone. I said, ma'am, do you have kids? And in that moment, she took off her hat of being an adjuster and I could tell she became a human. It was like, it was a split between this is a filed member and, oh wait, I have my kids, what are they doing? And then I was like, if you're a mother, could you imagine this happening to your child? And you're gonna sit here on the other line and give me this offer knowing, even if your insurance company said that this is, even if your company that you work for gave them this, you didn't fight them back on this? So when she called me back, she gave me another offer of $50,000 as a first offer. And I'm like, that's better. That's where we can have a conversation. So I'm teaching people how to discuss and talk talking points when they're doing this. But one main thing is, you know, that reptilian logic of I sometimes bring people to life, you know, on the other side, and they're looking at me as a claim number, and I'm looking at them as a person, and I'm bringing my client to life as well. And I teach other people how to do that as well as, you know, how to go through and do the actual procedures the way they're supposed to laid out.
Yeah. And there's definitely elements of that you could apply to other areas of law, like you said about the negotiation tactics as well and that kind of strategy. But
yeah,
just touching a little bit on the medical insurance point that you mentioned. So for people that maybe have like a slightly different system. So in the US, is it a case of that every time you have treatment, it has to be pre-approved with your medical insurer?
Right. So it depends here. We recommend highly that that your insurance goes through your insurance company. And so they have to be reimbursed as well at the end of the case, because it is not technically your fault for the accident, but it's something that you're going to be paying advance for. But it's something on the back end that they get reimbursed for. And with the insurance, yes, a lot of our people with Medicare, Medicaid, they're through an state program, they have to be pre-approved. And the way that we handle that generally is getting them into a doctor, you know, getting them into their doctor their that can get that procedure approved, and then moving them forward into, like, as soon as possible, like, you know, whatever pre-authorization forms they have to fill out, whatever they need, we get that done and get them to a specialist. So, and then we get the updated logs through them throughout the whole process. And that can take some time. So when dealing with anything ran by the government, it's like, in order to not elongate your case, you have to start, you know, making sure you have everything with them in the beginning. So, you know, getting all of their ledgers, making sure that you keeping that just up to date, and then making sure you know what they want to be reimbursed for. So here they are reimbursed because we don't want to bankrupt the government in all of these different cases. So we make sure we have that dollar amount, and then we get a reduction on that dollar amount. And then that's actually the best way to do it, to be completely honest. I do not, when people come in the US and they don't have any type of health insurance, they don't have any type of vehicle health insurance, it becomes really hard because the doctors will take their case on a lien, where they're saying, hey, protect us, put it in writing that you're protecting us and this is a legitimate case, and we will go ahead and let the client treat with us, and then you pay us out of the case. And that happens a lot here. And so when that does happen, you have to be so connected with your case so that that doctor, you don't lose that relationship, because it's, at the end of the day, it is a relationship. He's offering to put up services at no additional cost. And sometimes when you do those relationships, it's better than going through the health insurance, because you can reduce it almost to what the health insurance is going to pay anyway. So you can do a 50% reduction with the doctor, and that helps speed up the process as well.
Okay. So just moving on now to the next question, which is, are you ever greeted with adversity when coming into a law firm to help staff? If so, can you share an example of that time, and what did you do to overcome it, and how do you plan to approach those situations in the future?
So I like that, because a lot of times I do, well, I won't say a lot, I will say there have been occasions where I would come into a firm and the firm hasn't communicated with their staff, like my purpose. And so they're kind of confused and they feel intimidated, because they're like, why is someone here? I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for a long time. And so when I come in, I love to, you know, start off if it's going to be like a Zoom or over, you know, or whichever, and I'm talking with them and I'm showing them I am in your corner every step of the way. The purpose of your company bringing me in is they're investing in you. They're investing in your knowledge and everything that you are, so that you can not only be as amazing as you are now, but then take it up a notch to the next level. And then I always let, you know, staff know that at the end of the day, you know, if your firm does well, they're going to compensate you as well. So if you're able to double their profits over the next few months, I would say 10 months, usually I've seen where my clients have double profits in 10 months, but you know, I would say at that point, I'm like, you'll see it come back to you, you know? And so when I map that out, sometimes I get, you know, that's all I need to do. But a lot of times when I'm talking to a paralegal who's been doing this for 30 years or for more, they, you know, they really do shut down. And the way that I'm able to grab them in has been to tell them something that they may have not known. So I know a lot of medical anatomy about your spinal column, and you know what types of accidents need what types of MRIs, things of that nature. So I'm able to really communicate certain things that the average case manager may not know, or even associate attorney. And then once they hear it, they're like, oh wow, honestly, attorneys are a lot easier for me to train a lot of times than their staff. But you know, for the future, the way that I handle, I've been tackling this issue, is I've been giving everyone in the office personality assessments, and it helps me because at that point I'm able to know, like, how do you like to be communicated to? Like, what is your primary way of receiving information? And once I get those results back before I start training, I see now how I need to communicate with each person and what they respond to. And that allows me to become a more an effective trainer, because it allows me to say, okay, this person, you know, learns more visually, or this person, it's hard for them to let people in. They're really guarded and, you know, it'll take them time. I know not to push the envelope with that person. So it's like, I try to come on their court, their field. And the way that I see it, I can't come into a place with the iron fist to the point that it shuts people down. I have to allow for an organic rapport relationship to happen so that they feel that they trust me. And all the case managers that I work with, they still call me to this day, like from 8 years ago, they still call me. They're just like, I just want to, you know, and they love me. And it's because they realize, oh wow, Stephanie's really here for us. You know, even though your boss pays me to help you, I am trying to, you know, get a relationship together so that you can be the best of you. And when they see that that's truly where my heart is, they're like, oh wow, she's great.
You really get to know them, and I guess like that you figure out their way of working and like you know, communication and everything. So I guess that's, you know, that's really great.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I one of the biggest law firms here, I worked here for over, you know, a decade, Morgan & Morgan. You may not be aware of them there, but they're like huge here. They're the biggest law firm in America. And I learned that strategy almost through them because they really do small net, like small groups of people. And you really, you know, get a relationship with each of the people in your group and you work so cohesively. And, you know, John Murray himself, they really truly care about you and who you are and what struggles you have in life. And just because you're not performing, you know, they'll maybe put a person in a room with me for me to train them and, you know, watch what I do before saying, hey, you can't work here anymore. You know, so I like the way that they handled things. He was a really good boss. And I felt like if the man who has the largest law firm in the entire America can get to know his employees and their strengths and their weaknesses to place them in the best positions, why can't I, you know? So I really took that from him. And I just love the way that he handled people, and that's how you should handle people. And that's probably why he has people working for him for 30 years.
Yeah. And I think that links back to a conversation we had earlier about why people are leaving, and maybe it's because they're not actually connected to their workforce, to their employers. And that leads me into, I guess, the last question then, which is the point about employers trying to appeal to a millennial and a Gen Z workforce. And those generations are actually looking for career progression, they're looking for purpose in their roles. So how do you think training can really benefit a law firm or a business?
I think that it identifies quickly people who are there because they're passionate about it, and people who are there for a paycheck. And it's not that I reveal that, my training by itself reveals it because I'm so passionate. I love what I do. I could look at medical records or hospital records or an MRI and tear up. That's if it's a small minor child, and I had, you know, two kids that were just, they were hospitalized, you know, their mom was out of the country. They got into a car accident. One young lady, 8 years old, you know, she lost use of her hands and her feet. So, you know, these are cases, but these are also, and I could tear up, that's how passionate I am. So when I'm talking to people, generally I attract that energy out of people. And when a person doesn't have that energy level, they don't want to do it. They don't want to be involved. And so what happens is it reveals that person. So generally either that person will, you know, stay and get with the program, or a lot of times the employer will try to move them into an area of the firm where it may match their strengths, or the person may decide to leave. But generally they're replaced by a person, and with the year-round program, with me being able to train that new person, it becomes, they already have what we expect from when they started. So there's no, you know, there isn't any issue and there's no incongruency here at this point. You know, we all know what's happening, and I see nothing but progression when firms end up transitioning that way.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. And I think maybe,
but the, you know, Gen Z though, I was going to say Gen Z is more, also I think that law firms, what they don't do now is they can actually create positions within the firm or levels of positions so that people can feel like they can grow and they can have more money instead of having one position that says one thing, and then they give them small raises throughout the year. You know, even if you're only one person in a firm, give them three levels. Say you're a one now and you get up to four and cost that out to like this amount of money you just hear, so that they know that, hey, if I get to this level, I could make this much money at this place, you know, create these positions, COO, things of that nature, and or the head or directors. Yep. And within your firms, that's what's going to attract Gen Z in firms. They're not going to be attracted to a sole person if they feel like there's no growth. Also, Gen Z likes titles. So like if you, for instance, wanted to say, you know, like I said, the director of something, and they're making the same pay they would have made earlier, they don't mind that. They want that prestige. They want on LinkedIn to show, they want to tell their friends and family what they're doing. And then they want to use that to leverage positions in the future. So Gen Z, I don't know if it's all about getting to know them per se, because they all have their life outside of work. I think that for Gen Z, it's mainly going to be the money and the title and also flexibility with them, because they want to also have their side businesses, their podcast.
Yeah.
They want to do their TikToks, and they want to be able to do them both sometimes. If a person, I've seen people do 3 years making a lot of money on podcasts, on TikToks, because they pay them for posting, but then they still have like their jobs too, but they don't want to leave, but they want the flexibility.
Right. Yeah. Everyone wants to be a YouTuber or an influencer or something like that. Yes, now. So.
Everyone. So it's about the flexibility for them. And if you allow, I bet like if firms decided to put like an area in their firm where, you where it's like the grass, where it's like, oh, this is the social media area. You know how many people would use that in an office space where they could just sit there and just make like little, they do that in all these high rises here. Like I live in Midtown and it's high rise, and they build at the top level of some of these places, they build a social media rooms so that you can.
Really?
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that's new. That's new to me. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for joining me today, Stephanie. If you'd like to hear more about from Stephanie, we will include her details in this episode's description. Don't forget to leave a rating and a review, and let us know if you have any questions via social media or email.